Breaking news coming in from Bet365, where every nail-biting overtime win, breakaway, pick six, three-point shot, underdog win, buzzer beater, shootout, walk-off, and absolutely every play in between is amazing. From football to basketball and hockey to baseball, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Sarah Murray. Good morning, Sarah. How are you?
Morning. I'm really well. How are you doing, Yas?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm really looking forward to this one. But Sarah, before we get into the kind of thick of it, maybe just a brief insight around who you are and what you do.
Oh, wow. So on a good day, I'm a fully functioning human being professionally. Outside of that, I'm on career number two out of, you know, I don't know how many. I currently work as a sports psychologist, performance coach in elite high performance spaces. I've spent the last 15 years in football, but I've worked and currently work also into some corporate leadership work and across a couple of other sports, but predominantly, football for the last 15 years. Previous to that, I was a PE teacher and athlete, so I played National League hockey myself, so retired athlete, and just now have a consultancy business where, like I said, I just work across spaces and do a lot of work with coaches into football.
Awesome. And just to kind of, you know, just to really touch on your journey a little bit then, how did that second career jump shift happen?
It's a really good question. So I mean, I guess I was always fascinated when I was playing. So through my playing career, always fascinated by my own response to big moments in the game, big match moments, moments where it was a cup final. And I always noticed I was different. I was different in training to how I was when I played. And I was fascinated by that and by human behaviour in performance. Now, obviously, back in the day, as a female, there was no chance that I was going to be a professional athlete because the avenues weren't like they are now for women in the game. So I became a PE teacher, but I'd always kept this interest of like human performance and, you know, why did I never turned up to big match moments? Like I was that player that was brilliant in training and, you know, never switched it on in a game. So in my late 20s, I experienced burnout, mental, physical, chronic fatigue disease. And it just triggered me to just pursue this path of psychology, sports psychology, which I'd always been a bit interested in. So I did a master's in sports psych at Brunel University. And after my master's, the plan was actually to go back to and finish my teaching career. But I was so, I loved it so much that I just thought, wow, like, I wonder if I could do this for a living and actually support athletes to understand how the brain impacts performance and how we can understand that better. So I then embarked on a 3-year training process post-master's to actually learn the soft skills of being a sports psychologist, set up business, like worked with all sorts of grassroots to elite level athletes and everything in between. A 96-year-old golfer was one of my first clients. Like the Sussex Referees Association, I remember turning up to a field at 9 o'clock on a Wednesday night in a hut and just doing some stuff on managing stress and like managing emotions as a referee, so all sorts until 2013. And then in 2013, I was fortunate enough to get a full-time job in football with Brighton Hove Albion. At the time, one of the only full-time sports psychologists within a club. So, I mean, that just speaks volumes to the club. And that was the start of a nearly 9-year journey with them full-time. And then I've been self-employed for a couple of years now.
Awesome. You know, there's so many things that kind of just, you know, jumping off in my head around where to kind of pick up. But I want to take it back to your kind of your fascination. You I guess you were very self-aware in many respects, in the fact that you were kind of just even curious enough to ask those questions of why are my behaviors maybe different on a match day to that in training. What kind of sparked those initial thoughts? Because I guess at a younger age, I mean, there's probably many people that have these kind of thoughts. I guess for young people, especially in my experience, being able to maybe one, understand those thoughts, and two, be able to maybe potentially articulate them, and beyond that, potentially be more curious and ask questions and get guidance and support around it, is probably a massive challenge and probably not that common. So, you know, where did that kind of start with you?
Like, it's here. I have to say, I'm always really transparent with this. Like, yes, I'm a qualified sports psychologist, but, you know, if we rewind the clock 20 years to when I was playing, if someone had said, like, you know what, go and work with a psychologist because it, you know, to work on your performance, I would have run a mile. And I always say that. Like, I'd have gone, no, there's nothing wrong with me. I don't need to see a psychologist. Because I think back then, even, you know, my understanding of what that was or what that wasn't was definitely like, you know, there's got to be something wrong with you, like that traditional sort of white coat, kind of, you know, thinking about mental illness and mental ill health, rather than actually, we all have mental health and physical health every day. And for all of us, it fluctuates, and that's just normal. And so if we're working on our physical health, then why would we not work on our mental health? And so I think for me, I was just in, as I got to my late 20s and early 30s, and I knew that I'd have to be retiring from the game, it just sparked real curiosity and understanding more about myself and understanding more about, you know, why I do what I do, why I perform as I do. And that, I think, for me was massive. And I think, much as, I guess, with young athletes, and I work a lot with young athletes and I have done over the past, maybe because of my links with teaching and pedagogy and just really being interested in young people, I often say to them, so if I'm working with a young footballer, like, I often say, you know, are you fit at the moment? They'd be like, yeah. And I'm like, well, are you working in the gym? Are you doing some gym work? Are you working with the S&C? Obviously, if they're fortunate, you know, if they're in a Cat 1 Academy. Yeah, of course, yeah. I'm like, why are you doing that then? And like, oh, because I want to get fitter, because I've got a little bit of movement pattern that I want to sort out, or straight line running speed, whatever it is. I'm like, oh, okay. Said, so are you mentally fit at the moment? They're like, oh, yeah, fine. I'm like, okay, that's good. Well, do you want to be mentally fitter? They're like, oh, I suppose. I'm like, well, we can do some work together. Like, because if you're already fit, none of us would think twice about being physically fit but going to the gym. What's the point? Well, you're there to get fitter.
Yeah.
So it's a sense of, you're not just working with a psychologist because there's a big issue or a big problem, but actually, how can we utilise this under any circumstances, whether you're, you know, mentally in a great place or whether you're perhaps struggling, but actually it's just part of performance. It's part of human performance, whether we're talking about young footballers, whether we're talking about corporate leaders, whether we're talking about managers, coaches, to just do the work on ourselves mentally. And I suppose that reframe for me is massive. And if someone, when I was younger, had approached me and I'd had that opportunity, then yeah, there's always the ifs, buts and maybes, isn't there? But who knows? Maybe the path might have been different for me.
100%. It just got me thinking there. But, you know, why is that? You know, is it a society thing? Is it a culture thing? Is it? But even within what you say, like, you know, you're right. You know, we probably do, in many respects, prioritise our physical health rather than our mental health. And, you know, I guess the only thing that can kind of come to mind for me is because it's this thing that's probably easier to see. You can actually see the difference in your physical health. And, you know, both from an internal perspective and an external perspective in terms of other people noticing it, right? Whereas how do you really capture, you know, the development of your mental health? And I think, you know, you make a great point that it shouldn't just be seen as something that we look towards in
times of struggle or times of, you know, need, if you like. It should be a thing that's, you know, it's a maintenance thing. You know, can we stay consistent with what we're at? And, you know, is there ways to kind of tweak and develop it further, even if it is that 1%, you know, in terms of shifting mindset? So I guess, you know, just on that then, you know, you mentioned there about a lot of your experiences being with, you know, young athletes. You know, you're working a lot with young athletes at the moment. And, you know, one of the things about the podcast in particular that really, you know, really kind of inspired me in the beginning was there's so much information out there. And I always say to people all the time, like, this is for me, you know, having been doing this for the last 3 years, it's probably been the best CPD of my journey, because I'm just constantly sharing ideas and, you know, gathering insights and just think, you know, it's challenging me to think differently sometimes around how I operate. But one of the key things I really wanted to get across to especially everyone listening to this is that these are not things that are just limited to the quote unquote elite world. They're applicable all right across the board. So, you know, in terms of that, you know, we talk in football in particular, I'm sure it's relevant in other sports. We talk about holistic development and the idea of, in football, you know, the FA have got this four corner model and things like that. But when it comes to speaking about this psych stuff and how to really support that, everyone probably does think, oh, I'm not a psychologist. Well, you don't need to be, because we're all kind of, we're building those connections. We're having those relationships. It's how we utilize in those relationships, how we demonstrating our want and care for one another, if you like, to kind of influence and support them. So I guess, bit long-winded, but if we were to kind of strip it right back, and you know, I'd say to you, where can someone start if they're not too confident on how to maybe support their athletes, whether in an elite environment or even in a grassroots environment? Where are some good start points for them?
Yeah, I think you made a really valid point. You know, like, the everyone says, oh, you know, you're kind of really interested now in human behavior and you're a psychologist, and I get the classic, god, are you reading my mind? No. Like, I'm no different now, really, than I was, you know, 15 plus years ago, in terms of, like, I just really, really thrive off supporting other people, other human beings in performance spaces, particularly in and around sport. And, you know, that might be grassroots, it might be the elite level. I'm fascinated by human behavior, by how we build relationships. And I'm not that way because I'm Sarah the psychologist. Like, I'm that way because, like you said, we have one of our basic human needs is a need to feel connected to others. And that's across any space. And you're absolutely right. Like, as coaches, like, what an unbelievable privilege and responsibility we have when it comes to influencing the young people in our care. Like, it's just an incredible platform that, as you said, to understand how to work with the mental side of young people is complex, and it can be quite scary. I think fundamentally, as humans, we're often quite scared of stuff we don't understand. And anecdotally, over the years, my work in football, I would say 90% of the conversations that I have overheard from coach to coach, or coach to player, or player to coach, or coach to parent, 90% have been rooted in the mental side of the game. Like, there is no question in my mind the value that is placed on the mindset and the mental side of the game, and developing healthy, happy and functional young, like, players. However, like you said, because there's no, like, well, let's pop to the gym and work on that, and we'll do, you know, some bench press sets, and we know that we can see the results, we tend to then just go, well, I don't know how to work. I really value it, but I don't know what to do about it. So I'm just going to leave it over there in the corner, and we'll focus in on the S&C, or we'll focus in on some of the physical stuff, because I understand that. And yet so many of the conversations are rooted in mindset. And I guess it's a long-winded answer, isn't it? But to go back to your point around, like, connection and relationships, I always talk to coaches about, like, how do we turn natural curiosity into deliberate practice? So we would have natural curiosity about the player in front of us, like, you know, why they do what they do, the behaviors we see from them, you know, what we might know about their world outside of football, like, you know, school, life, relationships, parents, caregivers. Like, we might be naturally curious about that. But how can we turn that into deliberate practice? How can we make sure that, as a coach, I have got, like, a little bit of a framework that I know that I tend to talk more to the players that remind me of me, or I tend to have a bias towards these players, and like I can tell you loads about them but probably can't tell you much about this kid over here because I've labeled them the lazy one, or I've labeled them the, you know, disinterested one. And just much like being a psychologist, like the work starts as a coach on ourselves, doesn't it? And understanding our own biases and our own, how do we build relationships, what are our experiences of it, and what is it in me that stops what I want to see emerging in you, is a quote by Dan Rass. And it just is that sense of, what is it in me as a coach that means I really struggle to coach this kind of kid or this kind of player, or maybe I don't approach them. And how can I be deliberate about finding out about the one that maybe I've labeled the lazy one or the late one or the disinterested one? Because often as coaches, we do gravitate towards young players that remind us of ourselves, or their aversion of hard work is like I would agree with. And so it's I guess going, well, the kid over here, actually, what's going on for them? Not like he's not tracking his man, he doesn't lean into the game like the other kids. It's not a case of, oh, what's wrong with him or her. It's a case of what's happened to them. What's going on there that they don't track their man, they don't notice stuff, or maybe they're late to training, maybe they seem disinterested sometimes, because labels are firmly for jars. Labels are for cars, not for players.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great point. And I think, you know, it just got me thinking about a couple of different things. The first and foremost is, you know, it just takes me back to my experiences when I'm working in coach development in particular, where I say to coaches all the time, you know, you've got to kind of reframe your mindset. And if players aren't doing what you want them to do for whatever reason you think it might be, try and take accountability for that, even when you think it's not your fault. Because I think it just puts you in a mind of, effectively more growth mindset around how do I solve this problem? You've identified the problem, but how do you actually solve it? And it kind of, you know, then hearing you talk about being, I guess, deliberate is something I say a lot to coaches, that, you know, can we be deliberate and intentional on actions and interactions? Because fundamentally, if we're being deliberate and intentional, means we're acting on the thoughts that we have in. And, you know, no one's saying that you're gonna find the right outcome all the time. But, you know, if we are actually working towards it actively, then obviously we're getting closer to understanding what that looks like. But something that you touched on there as well, that, you know, with young players, they're all different kind of variables, right? You know, this player might be the late one, but whatever. But I think it's really important to understand, as coach, we are going to have our biases, and that it's not that we should ignore those. Yeah. But let's just be aware of what those are and try and catch ourselves when they're kicking in. So, you know, you talk there, I remember in recent conversation I had with coaches, they, you know, talk about their best players. And the question I always ask is, just what makes them the best player? And it often, you know, whittles back down to some form of, oh, they just get it. Okay, well, maybe there's something happening there. Why are they getting it? And then it reminded me of a conversation I had with one of my good friends. He's a twin, and he seems convinced that he's just been the better footballer the whole time. And I've just said to him, well, maybe not, but maybe the environments that you've both been in. He goes, no, we've had the same coaching. Yeah, but the same coaching for two different people ain't going to have the same impact. It needs to be tailored, it needs to be individualized. Now, I've got an analogy that I use. It's like, if as a coach I've got 99 keys, but there's 100 doors I need to enter, one door is going to be left unopened. But then if I work with a colleague who's got the key for that other door, then we're going to impact that door. So the same thing applies with players. And if you've got one coach who's got a set approach and they're limited by their abilities and their capabilities, there's going to be some players which are not going to be impacted by that coach, or rather who may not be impacted in the same ways, in a positive way, as the other players in the environment. So I guess in catching ourselves around our biases, you know, how do we become more aware of those things? Because that's a challenge in itself. In one, accepting that you've got biases; two, recognizing what they are; and obviously, three, addressing them.
Yeah, it's a really great question, Yaz. And it goes back to that sense of, like, we have to do the work on ourselves. Like, as a coach, we have to understand that. And it's not about changing who we are. It's not about suddenly not having those biases, but it's just being really self-aware to go, actually, as a coach at my best, this is what you might see from me. And actually, when I'm struggling, or the things that are my take cares that I need to be aware of, is this, this, and this. And it just is that openness to go in, I'm not perfect. I am not going to be the right fit for everyone, but there is something for everyone in the way that I coach. And I will make sure that every single player, that all 100 have had some version of a key to support them to unlock whatever's next for them. Now, the level to which that impact is had is going to be variable. Of course it is. And that's natural. That's part of being a coach. But if there is that player for whom, A, you didn't realise that you didn't have the key, B, you knew you didn't have the key, but you did nothing about it, then like you're doing them a disservice. Like, and actually how you're not serving the needs of that athlete in front of you, that young person, and that footballer. And that goes for not just within the game, but beyond the badge. Because these, as I said, the influence we have as coaches goes way beyond the badge that player in front of us wears. Because we will have an influence long into their professional lives. We influence their relationship with football. We influence like so much as coaches. So it's massively important to start being aware of that. And another like really good point that you touched upon was that sense of like, who else in this environment knows more than I do or connects better with this particular player? Because it's not always going to be me. But actually, who knows more about them or has that connection, and how can I utilize that? And that's where co-coaching is so important. Like for those that are, you know, lead coaches and you've got your assistant, or if you're an assistant, like it's having those other people around you in the environment to go, let's understand more about the player in front of us. And if we do that collectively, then we will be able to unlock the next level and unlock like the what it is that player is capable of, whatever their you know Olympics is. And for some players it's just staying in the game at whatever level. For some games for some players it is like moving into the elite space and potentially earning a living out of it.
No, I was just going to say you make a fantastic point. It again brings you back to some conversation I had recently where you get coaches who are they're fighting that battle sometimes, or you know I've had them to come. You know, they're listening to the assistant coach. They don't really like listening to me. Who cares?
That's okay.
Is it working?
Mm.
If it's working, it doesn't matter. It just let it be what it is. And obviously, if you want to make an effort to obviously develop the relationship, that's another situation to kind of look at. But in the initial stages, is the player or the participant getting something out of the process, whether it's from you or your co-coaches or even, you know, the S&C coach or the chef or all that matter.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, where every nail-biting overtime win, breakaway, pick six, three-point shot, underdog win, buzzer beater, shootout, walk-off, and absolutely every play in between is amazing. From football to basketball and hockey to baseball, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
As long as they're getting that initial kind of buy into the environment and the development process,
yeah.
It's just looking at fundamentally when we're forming teams of, you know, especially when you go to the higher end of the, you know, the elite pathways, if you like, where you've got so many different people working in the teams. Whether that be the psychologist, whether that be the technical staff, whether that be the, you know, the player care staff, whoever it is,
yeah.
Everyone's got their own skill sets, and it's important for us to kind of really buy into that. And I'll talk a lot about the idea of building your craft off of your strengths and forming the rest around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, and it's that sense of, you know, fun. It's really difficult as a coach. But for all of us, we are ego driven human beings, aren't we? We've got an ego. And particularly like the coaches that I work with into like Cat One Academies, like it's very difficult to balance giving away, if you like, some of the power to your assistant potentially, or, you know, actually not being the leading voice, when sometimes you feel so much pressure from like the head of coaching or academy directors out watching you coach. And there's that sense of, well, I've got to be seen to be saying stuff. I've got to be seen to be like running the game almost for the lads or the girls. And yet actually good coaching is about facilitating our players to problem solve and do things for themselves. It's not about over coaching. And yet there's that pressure, isn't there, as a coach, that sometimes you feel like, you know, the more you say, the more you intervene, the better coach you are, particularly when under pressure and when you're being watched. And yet there's also the voice on the other shoulder going, but I know that more doesn't mean more, and that these players can only take on so much information. And I know that my assistant's got so much good stuff to say, but hang on, I don't want to make it look like he's a better or she's a better coach than me. So it's a really tough thing as a coach. And what you were talking about there around using, you know, particularly if you're privileged enough to be in an environment where you have got a co-coach, where you've got psychologists and you've got player care and lots of staffing, reminds me of there's a great kind of resource called Elephant Spotting. And it's essentially just talking about the parable of the blind man and the elephant. And this is a good way of thinking about how we can seek to understand the player in front of us. So it goes that actually a group of people were blindfolded, and they were put, an elephant was put in front of them. And each person with the blindfold had a certain part of the elephant that they had to basically work out what it was in front of them. So the first guy has the tail of the elephant, right? So he's just like, oh, is this like a bit of rope or something like that? You know, could be something like that. The next guy has got like the feet of the elephant. And so he's feeling around and he's going, oh, like this feels like a tree trunk or something. It's a tree. I think there's a tree in front of me. Like the other guy has got, you know, the tusk, and he's like, oh, this is some sort of like a weapon of some sort, you know, it's got to be something like that. So each of them had this little part and just went, well, this is what it must be. Now, if you think about that in terms of the player and all the information that each member of staff might hold about the player, the only way to get the full picture is to take the blindfolds off and to actually go, you know what, that we've got this piece of information. When you put this with it, it's an elephant. Of course it's an elephant, right? When you take the blindfolds off, you can see what's in front of you. But it speaks to that sense of, you know what, that your assistant coach might have had an amazing conversation and picked up on something from that player, like, you know what, the player's grandparent passed away a few weeks ago. Mm. Just had a little bit of a conversation. But if he holds on to that and doesn't tell anyone, and then someone else is going, hang on, he seems really not himself, right? Mm. Like, why is he? He's really dismissive, or he's not, just not himself. And it doesn't make any sense, because, you know, that piece of information hasn't been shared. And then you've got, you know, the psychologist going, well, actually, I noticed this the other day. He was late. He's not normally late. And so it takes a village, doesn't it, to raise a child? And it, that sense of elephant spotting, if you like, and coming together and going, what do we know about, you know, when this player's at his best? What do we know about the barriers to his or her potential? And what do we know that's going on for them in their world? And if all the bits of information come together, we got a jigsaw and it all makes sense.
Mm. I love that, because I think it just really paints the picture in that, you know, we're all going to have insights.
Yeah.
But without, you know, without collaborating. And it reminds me of my first experience when I went to work in the academy. I noticed there wasn't much collaboration between the staff. It was like everyone had their kind of, this is my part, this is my part. Okay, cool. But we're all quote unquote considered experts in each of our areas. Why are we not sharing information? Like, you know, if I know what you know and you know what I know, then, you know, there's a quote that stuck with me. One of my previous guests told me about it was, if I have an apple and you have an apple and we trade our apples, we've still got one apple each. If I have an idea and you have an idea and we trade our ideas, now we've got two. And it's just that compounding effect, right? The more insight we have, the more we can kind of make a more conscious and considerate decision on it. But link to that then. Co-coaching is obviously something that's becoming, I'd say, I don't want to say it's new, but it's definitely becoming more common. And especially in the elite pathways, but even in grassroots, there is more of an emphasis on co-coaching, because, well, in grassroots environments, they need more people to be on the ground. In elite environments, they can afford to have them. So where do you think people should start in terms of developing an idea of what that relationship should look like? Because I think this is a big one, and I'm big on questions. I'm big on that collaboration, but I think a lot of coaches find it really, really difficult.
Yeah, Yeah, and for some of the reasons I talked about, like we've all got an ego, right? And so like the way to start is curiosity, like curiosity beyond the badge. And I talk about beyond the badge a lot, because beyond any badge any of us are wearing, like that's the start point for connection with someone. Like what's the in, what's the common thing? It doesn't matter how different they are to you, like, you know, what their background, what the heritage is, like it, none of that matters. Like find the connection point. Like, and it doesn't have to be on the pitch. It doesn't have to be with your coaching philosophy. It doesn't have to start with the formation that you prefer playing or the way that you structure your sessions. Like if you have a coach that you've started to work with and you want to get to know them, that has to be deliberate and intentional. Like it can't be, let's start with comparing how we plan the sessions and what the flow of that might look like and how many interventions and what our thoughts on ball rolling time is. Like it has to start somewhere else, because if you have a strong foundation for a relationship and that includes difference, then you're going to be able to support and challenge each other. And just that sense of, I think, like what it's really important that we show up the way we want to show up. And if you are someone that is, as a coach, you are open, you are wanting to learn, you're all about, you know, kind of self-development, that you role model that to the coach that you're now working with. And actually you talk to them about, you know, at my best, this is what you're going to see from me. And, you know, on a tough day, I know this about myself. I can become a bit instructional. I can become really loud and shouty. Like I might seem a bit short. And what's really helpful when I'm like that, by the way, is don't ask me if I'm okay. Or what's not helpful, like give them a quick hack, and it encourages someone to then know that, you know what, that's all right, and they will most likely share something similar back with you. It's fundamentally, you're going to have differences, but if you can get to the bit that you both agree on, which is you both want the best for the players in front of you, then the difference is the good stuff. The difference is the challenge and support. We talk, don't we, all the time in coaching about like high challenge, high support. And that when you're building a relationship with a co-coach or assistant coach or the lead, that's where you got to start.
It's really interesting. You talk there about high challenge, high support, removing that ego. But there's kind of two things that are really just jumping out. I mean, like banging on in my head as you're speaking is transparency and let's leave everything on the table. You know, obviously to as best as possible, because obviously, you know, if moments do occur, and they will occur, because, you know, at the end of the day, we are emotional people, right? At least it's not hitting us by surprise, or we've got a preempted idea of this could happen, so we've got an opportunity to kind of tackle it as it arises rather than try and problem solve as it's happening. But you know, another thing that was coming through my mind as you were speaking there was, we're talking about the idea of obviously co-coaching there, you know, I guess peer-to-peer. But now we're seeing a real emergence, if you like, of coach development taking place. And there's a lot of people getting into the world of coach development. But I still feel like in many respects, there is stuff out there, of course, but there isn't that much guidance and support for what it actually means to be a coach developer, or even an effective mentor within this space. You know, so where would you encourage people to maybe start to begin to explore that relationship?
I think, like, who's looking out for the people? Looking out for the people. Right? That's why most of my work now is with coaches, because, you know, the responsibility and the influence a coach can have is massive. And it's important that we see coaches through the lens of a performer. Like, you're human, you're going to have good days and bad days. You're going to have environments where you find it really tough. You're going to have people in your team. So I mean your coaching team or the environment that you don't get on with, or that you, and so who's supporting the coach to understand that, to be able to influence others, to be able to build relationships, work through relationships with other coaches or with players or with parents or with academy directors, whatever it might be. So the idea now of coaches having coaches is becoming more common. And I guess coming from a psychology background, like the sense of a psychologist having a therapist is just a given. Like, if we're going to do the work on ourselves as a sports psychologist, then of course we need to actually be open to, like having psychology, having therapy, having a coach. Like I've had a mentor for years and years and years. And like, well, you know, when professionally or personally stuff is going on, and I just want to help to solve the problem, to understand why I'm being like I am, or someone to just give me a good slap, to be honest, virtually, obviously not literally, you know, this person has been there. And so now part of my role is that I mentor coaches in that same sense of, you know, the it's a tough job, right? It's a tough job. And so, you know, who have you got around you? Who have you got to pick up the phone to go, oh, listen, you know what, like this came up and this is what the assistant coach was doing and this happened in the game. And, you know, what's your thoughts on that? And like, and to ask the questions, the hard questions, what do you notice about yourself? Like, what did you do in that moment? Like, how did you respond? What was your emotional management like? You know, it's that space, isn't it? Whether you have it formally or informally, it doesn't really matter. But I'd ask the question of everyone listening right now, who's the person that you pick the phone up to that looks out for you, that will support and challenge you as a coach?
I think it's a great point. And I think, you know, it was something that always comes back to me is sometimes we're better off with people that are not even in the space that we're working in, because they're going to ask probably more brutal and honest questions, which is, I guess, could be perceived as naive, but actually sometimes they leave you stumped. Like, I never thought about, like, you literally never thought about that question, because I guess they're just looking at it from a purely external perspective, right?
Yeah, it's a human performance problem. If you've got a human performance issue, like whether you are a leader in like Amazon in the corporate world, whether you're a coach in a Cat 1, Cat 3 academy, like you've got a human performance problem, then it's not necessarily another coach wearing the same badge as you that is going to give you the best advice or listen or give you a perspective that is a different lens. And that's the thing we have to be open to, and it's not easy. We have to be open to somebody that's got a different view of the world to ours. And very often, we, like I said, our bias is confirmation bias, and we like to go to the people who know that they're going to nod along to our great ideas and say yes and well done and just, you know, confirm all the brilliant stuff we're doing as being brilliant, right? That's what we all like to do. But let's make sure we've got that person that we know we trust is not always going to do that. It's going to ask us the tough questions. It's going to really like challenge us a little bit, because that's how we get better. That's how we learn, and that's how we open our minds up to ensuring we know our biases, which kind of comes back to what we were talking about earlier.
No, definitely. And there's, again, a couple of things in there. Things first link back to something you talked about earlier about, you know, managing stress. And then even in a second part to it, is just looking at, and you've probably touched on this throughout the conversation already, but what would you say are some of the consistent habits, if you like, of people that are good at managing their performance at a higher level? And then within that, you know, what, you know, it could be habits or even just routines, if you like.
Curiosity, like the absolute like best coaches that I've worked alongside have been curious. They've asked questions, not always of everyone else, but of themselves first. And then they've been collaborative. Like the best coaches have just asked really good questions of themselves and of the people around them. They've collaborated. They've gone with this sense of, yeah, I might be the head coach, but I am not the holder of all knowledge, and I am not the expert on absolutely everything. I'm going to surround myself with like trusted people that I know more than me. And then like whether we're talking about coaching or leadership, like the best will never be the most knowledgeable in the room. They'll always have someone that knows more than them about something as part of their team. 100%.
You know, you're really just talking about vulnerability, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And the power of it. Like, I don't, for those listening that have heard of Brené Brown and her book around the power of vulnerability, like it is the strongest thing that any of us can ever say is, I don't know. And the next best thing is, but I know someone that does, or I know where I can go to find that out, and I'll come back to you. Now, if you're a player and you've got a coach, got a coach that does that, you are going to be going, well, okay, that's like, it's all right when I don't know stuff. But I won't do nothing about it, but it's okay that I don't know, and I can go and find out, or find someone that does, and they can help.
It doesn't have to be immediate.
You're role modeling like unbelievable, like life skills and performance skills, not just for a football pitch.
I totally agree with you, and I often say to coaches, it's okay to not to know, but once you know that you don't know, it's what you do after that.
Yeah.
You have to again take that accountability. Take, you know, be deliberate and intentional in your actions around, right, how do I change my situation? How do I get to a more positive outcome in that respect? Yeah. But no, go on, sorry.
Consistency. I was just going to say, you've just got me thinking about consistent actions and behaviours as well. So again, like the best coaches I've worked with, like winning 4-0, losing 5-0, you know, good day, bad day, whatever's going on for them, like they will be consistent in their behaviours and actions. Now, by consistent, I don't mean like nice every day, happy all the time. I just mean that, look, broadly speaking, they are self-aware enough to know whatever's going on for them, they will be consistent in their actions, behaviours, and the way in which they approach games, the way in which they debrief a win, a loss. And that's massively important, to particularly for young players, to have that level of consistency that you know what you're going to get from the gaffer.
No, I think you're spot on, because obviously, you know, it just makes me think about the whole idea of the social construction, right? Whether there's an individual or as the environment, this is what you can come to expect from it. And it's not going to differ based on it being a Monday or a Tuesday necessarily. This is the environment. This is what you, and I think that comfortability is what creates, I guess, a sense of calmness and a sense of, comfortability, really, just for players to kind of come into. My mind is going in so many different directions. I don't even know where to take it next right now, but I'm just thinking to myself, like, some of the key takeaways. So, like, you know, if there was people listening to this right now, thinking, right, okay, you know, there's been a lot of insight shared here. Where do I start? You know, how do I start challenging myself? And you talk a lot about curiosity, and I think curiosity gets thrown out there quite a lot. But yeah. I think the key thing for me is being authentic in that curiosity and genuine in it. I think there's a difference. You know, I think people maybe don't always notice, or don't always catch themselves in the moment, but it can show when it's not genuine. So, you know, where do people start with that? Because obviously that is a process in itself to get to that point.
I think, like, much like anything, you start by starting small. So for anyone listening to this, I'd say, right, from what you've heard today, you know, whether it's been from yourself, Yaz, or from something I've said, what is a very small thing that can be a micro action, like a tiny thing that as of today, you know, that you are going to start to do, or you're going to make an effort to do? For example, you might decide, do you know what, actually this week I'm going to create one casual collision with a player that I maybe just don't know enough about, or just want to connect in with. And so I'm going to do that by just ensuring that when he or she comes off the pitch, or, you know, at some moment of time, that I am in a similar space to them. And actually, I'm just going to like be real human and just ask them a question, see what's going on for them. How is their week? Like, maybe I'll start a conversation on the best boots ever. Right. And let's compare notes on what we think the best boots ever are. Like, it's a very small thing. So I would just say, get a micro action, a tiny thing that you 10 out of 10 know you can do as of tomorrow. And that's your start point.
I love that. I love the phrase casual collision as well.
It's a Google thing. So, it actually comes from Google, but it's that sense of, you know, the best stuff comes from casual collisions, like the corridor conversations, the pitch laps, you know, walking out to the pitch with, you know, when you're both carrying the balls, putting the cones out. Some of the best conversations I've had in coaching has been as we've both been like putting cones out, right? It's a casual collision, and they are really important.
Awesome. But Sarah, look, you've given me a lot of things to think about, and I'm sure the people listening to this would agree with that as well. Any final things that you want to share with us in terms of potentially where people can get in contact with you or the work that you do?
So you can look me up on LinkedIn, Sarah Murray. You can find me on X at Sarah Sports Psych, and Insta handle is Sarah at Performance Edge. But yeah, it's been a pleasure to be on. Thank you so much for having me, Yaz.
No, definitely. I really appreciate your time as well. You know, it's been a while since we've managed to get it done, but it was definitely worth it. So thank you again for your time. I really appreciate it.
We got there in the end. Awesome. Thanks.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.